Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest. Life comes at you fast, which is why it's important to find some time to relax. A little you time. Enter Chumba Casino. With no download required, you can jump on anytime, anywhere for the chance to redeem some serious prizes. So treat yourself with Chumba Casino and play over 100 online casino-style games, all for free. Go to ChumbaCasino.com to collect your free welcome bonus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Wendy's Coffee House.
I was sensitive to light. I was sensitive to loud, aggressive music. My diet became softer. It was more plant-based, a lot less red meat, no processed food. I was sleeping less. I was highly sensitive with energy around me. For example, I always could kind of pick up on people's energy, but more so now.
Chris Kito and some of the after effects of his NDE. Hello, and thank you for listening. The blogs, Talking to Nightlights, is one, and Wendy's Coffee House is the other, or you can find details in the links for the show. This time, we're going to talk about near-death experiences, specifically Chris Kito, who had a near-death experience in 2012. Absolutely no idea that this could happen. And the common thing with near-death experiences is it changes you. And we've talked with PMH Atwater. I've also talked with other near-death experiencers. And the shift that happens, for one thing, all of a sudden you realize the body isn't the end-all, be-all of existence. And how that changes you, of course, is individual. So Chris is going to share his story of what happened to him. And even though he shared it on, there's some fabulous shows out there. Anthony Shen has a documentary, and that's on YouTube. You can check it out about Chris's NDE. This is an audience maybe you haven't talked to yet, so I need you to give me the basics, and thank you for talking about this.
This upcoming April, about 10 years ago, I had a near-death experience from an anaphylactic reaction to a food allergy, specifically peanuts. I have an allergy to tree nuts and peanuts. As long as I can remember, when I was an infant, I had an allergy test, and I was allergic, so I grew up with that allergy, and at that time, I was 24. And I was at a friend's birthday party, and at that party, they had a cake that was being served, and in that cake, there were peanuts. I did not know there were peanuts in there. I always say, who even has a peanut cake or a peanut butter cake anymore nowadays? But they did, and lo and behold, I took a small bite while at the party, and I ingested a very, very small amount of the peanut, probably the quarter of the size of an M&M or a Skittle. And I did not have an immediate reaction. I just was more of an emotional reaction than, oh my gosh, what did I just have? I don't know what a peanut really tastes like. I have an idea of the smell, but I knew something was off. And then I realized, looking through the cake and the plate, that it was a cake with peanuts in it. So at that moment, I did not have an immediate reaction. Later on, it would turn into an anaphylactic reaction, but in medical terms, it was a delayed anaphylactic reaction to a food allergy.
A question. If you had known, if somehow you had realized what had happened ASAP, when something like this happens, can you vomit? I mean, I'm sorry, but I'm curious.
You know, in that moment, prior to the anaphylactic reaction I had, I never had a severe allergic reaction.
Okay.
I somehow, through my entire life, up until 24 years old, was able to avoid pretty much all contact with peanuts and tree nuts.
Mm-hmm.
So I did not know what my reaction would be.
Okay.
I did not have any experience with anaphylaxis. I did not know what would happen, what could happen, or what were the steps of what would unfold.
Yeah.
So I just didn't know. So could I have thrown up? I mean, I guess if I could have tried to make myself, if the peanut even came out of my stomach.
I know.
It was a very small amount. So I never thought of that. And in that moment, that was not something I was thinking about at all. In that situation, what I was thinking was, let me go home, take some Benadryl, and I'll sleep this off.
Yeah.
And that was it. That would be the, in any type of, you know, taking this moment, any type of situation where there's ingestion of a food allergen, the response is epinephrine, which are the EpiPens people carry,
yeah,
and Benadryl. It's not so much vomiting it up. I'm sure if you could, that could help,
mm-hmm,
if you kind of were able to do it, and with everything else racing and trying to get the medicine in, and there's procedures that you want to follow. But again, I was never in a situation like this, so I had no idea what to expect. And I did not think this was a life-threatening situation at that time either, because I've never ingested a peanut. So I didn't know. I thought, all right, I'll just, you know, maybe be have an upset stomach for a few hours, but two or three Benadryl knock it out, no big deal. That was my assumption.
Okay.
Immediately after and following.
The game plan, yeah.
So I ended up getting home from the party. About an hour later, I'm like, all right, let me get to bed. Let me take a couple Benadryl, go from there. And then I'm laying in bed. It's Sunday night, getting ready for Monday. I'm like, oh, you know, I really can't sleep. Let me go get another Benadryl. And then I'm like, oh, you know, is my breathing changing? I don't feel well. Is it just my nerves? And you're having these racing thoughts of, well, is something really off, or am I just kind of making myself upset? And, you know, I'm running through this in my head. And then I get up a little bit later and I look in the mirror and I have hives breaking out in like a rash and hives all over. I'm like, all right, something's not right here. Let's see what happens. And give it 10, 15 minutes and I don't know what I'm going to do. Let me see if I can find my old EpiPen, see if it's even still valid. It may have expired. What am I going to do here? All right, we'll see what happens in 15 minutes. And then I'm like, you know, I'm testing my breathing. I'm like, is my breathing becoming more and more labored, or is it just me? Again, at this point, am I getting myself upset, or is my body having a reaction to what happened earlier? Again, I don't know, because I haven't gone through this before, so I'm kind of making it up. I'm not trying to overreact, but I'm trying to be proactive, or at least sense to my best ability what the situation is transpiring in this moment. Then I start to realize, all right, my breathing is getting tougher now, and I think this is progressively getting worse. And regardless, I've been taking Benadryl. It's not working, and we're getting worse and worse, not getting better. So we're not heading in the right direction. So I said, all right, what am I going to do here? It's Sunday night. Do I call an ambulance? Are they going to have epinephrine? Do I use my EpiPen? What happens when I use my EpiPen? Am I able to still function, drive? What do I do in this situation? I was new to this city. I'm originally from New York. I was living in Los Angeles at the time. So I'm new. I just got to LA a few months prior. So I said, all right, what am I going to do? So I thought, all right, let me grab my EpiPen. Let me just go to the hospital, bring myself to the ER. So I'm driving to the hospital. Thank goodness it was a Sunday night around 11:30, 12 o'clock. The roads were pretty much empty. So I was able to get to the hospital. I remember getting into the hospital and I was going down fast. I just remember thinking, focus on breathing, just focus on breathing. And breathing was getting harder and harder. My throat was closing. So I was not taking in oxygen anymore. Yeah. So I have the physical aspect of I'm not taking in oxygen. And then you have the mental and emotional moment as well, saying, oh my gosh, I can't breathe, but I'm still able to function mentally to a point where I know what's happening. I know this is like, okay, I'm running out of oxygen. I'm running out of retaining oxygen. Mm-hmm. I get to the hospital. And there were very few moments that evening and leading up to the NDE and the NDE that are so vivid still 10 years later. And I remember walking in. And the woman at the front desk, the check-in at the ER, says, do you have any idea? I said, I'm having an allergic reaction. She says, do you have any idea? And I pull out my wallet because I'm going to pull out my driver's license. And in wallets, they have the little slits where you put your credit card, your driver's license, all those. And I remember I wasn't able to pull out. I was fumbling around trying to pull my license out of the wallet.
Yeah.
To give her. And I remember I fell into the desk, kind of. And at this point, I later found out I was red. I had rash. I was in a full-blown allergic reaction. And they grabbed me. A nurse, another nurse ran around. They carried me. And they pretty much carried me back into the ER. And they threw me on a bed. And a team of nurses and a doctor started to work on me. They put me on oxygen, Benadryl shots. Everything, epinephrine coming in through my shoulder and neck. And I was in a full-blown, at that moment, I had trouble moving. I was becoming more and more nonverbal. I was just, this was like the beginning of really the very critical medical period and the start of leading into the near-death experience. So I always looked at, there were different chapters. There was the pre-NDE, getting to the hospital, the moment in the hospital, then there's the after when I walk out of the hospital. So that's the first chapter, the first of three parts is me getting, and then now I'm on the hospital bed.
That part you remember pretty clear.
with this, is it in and out on the hospital bed?
No, it's pretty vivid. It and I'm going to take my time to explain this, because this is now we're going to go into the main part of the NDE, and you've had many interviews doing this for years.
Yeah.
I'm going to do the best I can with language and being as descriptive and paint the most accurate, detailed picture for you and your listener in this moment.
Okay.
Because it's a very tender moment. I want to really convey what was going on, because this is the near-death experience. And it took years for me to get to this point. I didn't speak about my near-death experience openly and the entire story for eight or so years after the incident. So there's a lot that I had to process to get to this point to describe what went on in these next few moments.
Okay.
When I was laying on that bed, I remember thinking to myself, why is everyone so panicked moving around me? They cut my shirt. I'm hooked up to all these things. And I remember just thinking, this is it. I'm going to die. That's it. Like, I'm not coming back. I remember that moment and that emotional wave of just, this is it. And I was totally at peace. I was not in pain anymore. I had pain coming in. And then when I was sitting, laying there in that hospital, there wasn't any pain. I was just there. I was watching a show unfold around me, to put it in terms that I could try and relate with language. And everyone's frantic and they're moving around. They're holding my mouth open. They're thinking about putting a tube down there because they can't stop the reaction. The anaphylaxis isn't stopping, and they're pumping me full of the epinephrine. And I remember the doctor clearly looking at me, and they're looking, they're trying to get, trying to put a tube down my throat. And they said, we can't get it down there because it won't actually go through the throat. It's so closed off. And he says, I'm really sorry. I can't save you. And I didn't have any reaction to that. I just remember being there and accepting it. Not that I had any desire to die at all. I just, in that moment, everything was just acceptance, and I was very much at peace and just there and just, okay, all right.
Yeah.
It was beyond me in a sense. I was just there in this physical form and slipping away. And in this moment, there's no concept of time. I'm just there. And my two grandfathers, one deceased many years before I was born, one passed away several years after I was born. So I don't really have a relationship with either of them in this physical sense. And one of them I never met. One of them I met when I was a small child, but I don't really remember being around, came to me. And in that moment, I remember thinking, oh, I'm dying. This is it. It is what it is. That was it. There was nothing else. And my one grandfather looked at me and said, you can't die. You have work to do. And in that moment, I thought, okay. And my response was, and this was the best way I can say it, was a telepathic communication, a spiritual consciousness communication, that I knew that was them there. And I thought to myself, okay, no, I don't want to die. I can't die. And I remember in that moment thinking, all right, I'm going to fight. Like, now this is like a fight or flight. And in that moment and leading right up into it, I was in this absolute euphoric state of being. Unbelievable, unworldly. That's the best language I can come up with of that moment. And then when I said that, I said, nope, I'm not. I said, you can't die. You worked it. I said, that's it. I'm not dying. That's it. No, I'm not. And then boom, I like snapped back into my physical body. And I remember gasping for air and feeling unbelievable amounts of pain everywhere and anywhere. It was just back. I was back. The euphoric bliss was gone. The pain, the noise, the frantic, the panic, scraping and survival to breathe was back. And I remember clawing, saying, turn it up. And they're like, oh, he's responsive. He's moving. And just that was a very profound moment to go from a blissful, euphoric consciousness in space to just a gritty survival and real and pain. And it felt like just getting pulled right back into my body and everything just right there, instant, right when I said that, right when that happened. And then I just continued to just fight and breathe, and over the next several hours, stabilized medically. And then the nurses and the doctors said, well, you know, it turned out it was about 7 hours I was in the hospital. I had no concept of time. I remember I asked him, and then, you know, you've been here for 7.5, 8 hours. I had no idea. And they go, you know, you're unrecognizable from when you walked in. We thought you were, you know, you were going to pass away. We couldn't stop this reaction. And they said, listen, everything looks okay now. Do you want to go home? And I said, sure. They're like, well, we need the bed, so you can leave. Yeah. So I had the little socks with the rubber on the bottom, and I got like a little bag with some paper, and I had a little bracelet, and I just walked out of the hospital. And, you know, I got to my car, and, you know, I always joke, I really knew I was back to this world when I had to pay for parking after my near-death experience.
Mm-hmm. Reality.
So I was like, yep, so I was back. And then the next morning, I just kind of woke up, and I was like, oh, my God. And I was in so much pain the next couple of days, and probably about 4 or 5 days after the physical pain subsided of what my body went through trauma-wise, of all the chemicals I was on, and that's just the physical. Then again, when I walked out of there, I wasn't thinking of this in any sense that I had no idea what an NDE was. I was not thinking anything other than I'm in physical pain. I just want to get home. Then, you know, the third chapter starts of the after effects, integration, the NDE, and how we get to where we are right now.
Yeah.
But that hospital was, you know, in the grand scheme, I always say, in the whole story arc of a near-death experience, the actual NDE mechanism in that moment is very small. It's minutes. It's seconds. It's so small compared to the overall story every NDE talks about, which is the after effect, the integration, what are you doing with it? What's happened from it? But the actual mechanism is extremely, extremely small, mm-hmm. very impactful. It changes lives completely. It completely changes everything, but it's quick. It's just like a flick of a switch.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you're back.
It's like a reboot.
Absolutely. It's a reboot. And the stories of these long NDE stories, they're the recovery. They're the physical recovery. They're the spiritual integration. They're the understanding, the finding community, the healing, the integration of the new person mentally, physically, emotionally that's been changed. Not with, I say, 20 years of yoga and consciousness work and all that. No, it happens overnight. Like, and that's a whole nother aspect when you look at the speed, because the body, everything else physically has to catch up with that integration. Here I am a decade later, and I'm still putting the pieces back together. And this is something I've worked at all the time for many, many years.
Well, when you did this, and you know, you're saying you had to integrate it, what was your first inkling that everything was different?
Well, there was the physical reset, which I thought was a lot. So at this point, I had no idea about IANS, NDE. I didn't even know the term or language or any of that. So I was just going off of being 24, just moved to a city, and I was putting pieces back together. So once the physical pain subsided, because that's all I was focused on for 5 days or so, then it was, oh, wait a second, what really happened? Oh, and little bits came back to me. Little things came back. The physical aspect was I started to eat less meat. I had a physically different energy kind of around me, because the people that knew me before and after were like, oh, you're a little bit different. Now, I never told anyone the story of what happened spiritually or the NDE context. They just knew I had an incident. So a few people knew about that. I was sensitive to light. I was sensitive to loud, aggressive music. My diet became softer. It was more plant-based, a lot less red meat, no processed food. I was sleeping less. I was highly sensitive with energy. around me. For example, I always could kind of pick up on people's energy, but more so now. I felt my vision reset slightly. My sense of smell, I remember I was smelling flowers I could never smell before.
Yeah.
But I remember I was able to smell these roses. That was shocking to me. So those are the physical.
Chris Kito talking about his NDE. We're going to take a quick break and come back with the other changes that came along as a result of that NDE. Wendy's Coffee House.
Riley Herbst from 2311 Racing here. And you know what grinds my gears? Waiting for coffee. But instead of counting frappes and lattes, I fire up Chumba Casino. No apps, no fuss, just fun social casino games to pass the time. By the time my coffee's ready,
order for Riley.
I've already taken a few victory laps. Next time you're stuck waiting, make it entertaining. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Wendy's Coffee House. Chris Kito had an NDE in 2012. It changed him in a lot of different ways. We talked about the physical. He explained those in the last break. And what else changed?
The massive ones and the ones that take a lifetime to integrate is the mental and emotional and spiritual changes of who you are getting put back together. And I was very fortunate. I always kept a journal for many, many years. I think I started when I was 13 or 14. And I journaled during my NDE, and I did not know what an NDE was. And I put several times in my writing, my consciousness changed. That came up several times. I clearly wrote that out.
Mm-hmm.
And again, so then I knew things were changing, and I was trying to figure out who I was. And for the first 6 months after that NDE, I would wake up or throughout my day, and I wouldn't know who I was. I knew, my name, and I tie my shoes and things like that. But I didn't know my emotional hardware. I didn't know how I would respond or handle things, if that makes sense. Because the way I was pre-NDE was no longer who I am post-NDE. And I had no idea. I didn't know that this is what happens. I didn't know I had a near-death experience. I just thought, oh my God, something traumatic happened, and I don't really know who I am anymore. I had no idea what my values are, what I want, what I thought I wanted. 30 days ago, I wanted these things. Now, I don't know. I don't care. I don't feel anything. What's something that is important to me changed. Everything changed. The first 6 months, I had no idea. I would just be like, I don't even know. I'm relearning myself. That's what I would say.
Did you become less materialistic? I mean, was there a less focus on the job or a different type of job or different type of friendship?
I will say this. It was repurposed. I remember lying there in the hospital when I was suffocating alone on a hospital bed and slowly dying. The idea that material things don't matter. Now, everyone can say that, but to really understand that's something else. And I really understood it in that moment where I'm like, oh, wait, I'm just dying right here. Nothing's coming with me. It doesn't matter if I have the brand new iPhone or anything. Like, dead is dead. I'm gone. Like, it's all staying here. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that's carried over. With that, though, I enjoy nice things. I think anyone should be able to. But it's the importance you put on them and where you put them in your life. I would never put material items or money ahead of any human. I would never put it above any experience or moment or special time with someone. So I don't feel that material items are bad. I just feel that in our society and what I've noticed with a lot in Western culture, maybe all over, we tend to misprioritize where they belong. And that's where the problem comes. And I look at what's the consciousness behind someone, what they're doing at their business. I always say I'm a capitalist hippie. I think you could do a lot of really good things with wealth and money. And you could also do a lot of very bad things with that. And how you obtain it, being in service of others and having a point to help and benefit families and communities. It's fantastic. So I think there's a level of spirituality, but it's what's the consciousness behind what you're doing that's important, and how are you helping other people? So that was something I didn't really think about prior. Now, could that have been an age or could it have been the NDE? I think the NDE absolutely had an effect, if not increased it or brought those ideas that I believe in now. So there were many effects, and some of them are still being worked out now. Some other points I want to touch on in the after effects. I was always very intuitive growing up. And after my NDE, my intuition increased even more with some psychic ability and mediumship. I always made intuitive-based decisions. Now that's something more I do, much, much more. I can do readings. I can go into all of that. I can pick up on energy. That's had its challenges as well because it could be exhausting, and I have to learn how to really kind of protect my energy and how to balance that spiritual side with being grounded and functioning in community and today's world in the everyday basis. And I do think the NDE either uncovered it much more as well as also increased it exponentially. So still working with all of that, I came back with, you know, we're sitting about 10 years later, and only up until the last 2 years ago did I openly speak about my near-death experience. I did not talk about it prior. It was too difficult. I didn't feel like it's something I wanted to discuss. I had the opportunity to. I didn't want to. People asked me, I said, we don't talk about it. And I just didn't feel like it was the time and place. And then I decided that I was going to speak about it in service of others, because there is someone that could hear whenever I do speak, and maybe it helps them in some way. And I don't know who it may be, or I don't know how it may help, but sharing my story has been very healing for me, as well as for others. And I do this as an act of service and gratitude that I was able to walk out of that hospital, and I'm able to help others and share a story that is very personal, that other people may be going through something in their life, and they look towards the NDE community for answers that they might not be able to get from mainstream services, or they might not have a therapist, family, or network. Because what we're talking about is very personal. It's very touchy. It's not a light subject. Death, dying, consciousness, and those are not topics that are easily discussable among friends, family, or even medical professionals. So I find that, you know, speaking about it and the NDE community draws in many, many people that are looking for answers. They're looking for healing. They're looking for help. And if I can add to that pod of resources and people out there sharing their experience and someone can benefit from that, I think that's really beautiful.
Can I share an experience with you? This is from someone who saw one of your stories.
Absolutely.
Okay. This is a commenter. And she says, these videos bring me so much peace. I lost my dad and sister. I've been sometimes tormented by grief. When I watch them, I feel this sense of healing. I can feel my sister's spirit around me. It's the most incredible feeling ever. I don't understand it fully, but the other side is so real. It's so close. My sister and I used to sing together all the time. We had a band called Cozy. I took for granted a lot when we could do so easily all of this together before, but it became painful to want to sing again. I decided to bring it back, and I have dreams with her where she sometimes helps me write a song, or I can feel her with me when I'm writing songs over the piano and crying myself tired while there. This is truly the most important thing in life, to know we're not alone, that our loved ones stay by our sides forever, that we come here for a reason. We are meant to serve one another and love each other. Thank you so much for your message. Your spirit is so uplifting and so full of light. Thank you so much. This message is to you, Chris. Okay, so this is from seeing your video. This person is able to reconcile.
I never saw that.
Yeah. Well, I thought that might be helpful. Well, you know, you've had these videos all over the place. And going back and reading every comment would take you a few years.
You never read the comments. Let me tell you, Wendy, you never read the comments. Some are good and some could be bad. You don't do it.
Go forward.
But that's really beautiful. And that's a perfect encapsulation of why you never know. And with the power of the internet and YouTube and all these speaking engagements I have, I'm so blessed that there's such a wonderful community of, you know, hosts like yourself that are willing to put this together and put yourself out there and create this and take the time and energy. So many people all over the world. I've had people reach out from across Europe, South America, Australia, all over, and I just go, oh my God. And it was so interesting because that Anthony Shen video came out, which was one of my more viewed videos, and COVID hit, And then in that moment, I was getting I always know I get like a random message on Facebook or a WhatsApp message, and it's from another country, and they're like, oh, we saw your video, or someone in the Midwest of this country. It's been a really beautiful experience. That's not something I ever thought about. I didn't realize it just kind of happened. Like one day I put this content out there, and the interviews were with Anthony was actually done in the fall of 2019, then came out like the week COVID hit the United States. And I just started getting responses from people all over that I had no idea. I didn't even think about anyone would want to, because I don't personally watch NDE stories. It's very difficult for me. I really don't. And most of my content, I've never actually listened to. I still don't. It's very hard for me to hear the media that I do. So knowing that there's all these people out there and they're able to get something from it, if something I say resonates, it's really great. And that's what pushes me to do this, because it is difficult. I don't really enjoy reliving one of the most difficult moments of my life. And it's very scary. And there's always this uplifting arc and the beautiful story and ending with NDEs. But there are many NDEs that aren't. There are people that don't have a good community to fall back on. They don't heal properly, and they don't want to be here, and life doesn't work out well. And I would say there's not always that Oprah happy moment at the end. And I was very fortunate. Physically, I recovered. Many people don't. There are people that have allergic reactions and they're severely handicapped. It's an absolute miracle I walked out there without any brain damage or from that experience.
Yeah.
And then from there to be able to find community where I could focus on healing and spirituality for the years to come, to integrate this properly and be able to thrive and enhance my life from this experience. I'm very fortunate. NDEs are not always great, and it's tough. And mine was a very physically traumatic, scary, violent moment. And I'm very fortunate my life was physically saved. And then from there, I had the proper community to heal, recover, and grow from that. And many people don't. So as much as I can help others that have had NDEs, know someone that has, or anyone that's looking for help and healing, I put myself out there because I've gone through it. And my experience is unique. And it's touchy subject, and people often don't feel comfortable discussing this little niche in the public and or with some medical professionals or with friends and family in fear of judgment, or they may not understand or whatever it may be. And that's why I do this. That's my reason behind all this, as a thank you and gratitude for being given a second opportunity. And this is my way to give back and serve.
My question, you said, and this changed you, you're able to be more in touch with your intuitiveness, your psychic abilities. Do you do readings for people?
I don't professionally read for people. I have the ability to. I've worked with several coaches and have done some training over the years. I use it for myself and sometimes my family, and sometimes friends will ask me and I'll give them an answer and I can kind of pick up on things. But I don't actively market it as a professional medium, but my ability is on par with professional mediums. My business is, I'm in the health insurance industry, and that's where I make my money. And, for my family, I'll do readings. For some friends, I'll ask every once in a while. Some friends, a lot of friends don't really go into that, but some of my more spiritually open friends might ask a few things here or there. And then I generally keep it to myself. I like going to different spiritual circles and psychic circles and medium circles. So I'm active within the community with other people, but I don't actively market that skill. I just kind of keep it with me.
With energy, does that affect you? Are you unable to be in crowds or certain situations? Is it more difficult?
No, I could be in crowds. I'm fine with that. I just, with regards to energy, I can pick up on people well, and that can get exhausting. I've done a lot of work trying to be more protective of my energy, being able to ground out all of these other tools, whether it be taking a salt bath, sleeping on a grounding mat, putting my feet barefoot, doing quick meditations where I can drop in, I can protect my energy, I can block it, I can pull everything down and in myself and learn to work with it. I can read people exceptionally well instantly by kind of looking at them and seeing that. So that is a great blessing. It could also be difficult because you have initially, because I was pulling on everyone's energy, which can be very tough, but I'm very selective. And I have to be. If not, I get too tired. And I'm like, I'm just aggravated.
Yeah.
Like everyone else. That's it. I mean, we're still human. I just don't want to be around people.
Yeah.
So it can be tough. There are times where I'm just exhausted and I'm on the couch and, you know, I just need to take a bath with Himalayan salt and I need to ground out and I just need to be alone. Like most people, I think there's little things. I'd say if someone gets a bad feeling or like, I don't like this or that, like kind of a slight, it might be like a little pinch for me. It could be like a really hard punch in the face. That's the difference. Everything is amplified around me when I can kind of pick up on people or interactions or anything. Like I really can't stand when people beep their horn or when you see angry drivers. Like I can feel that it's like, it's not even anger. It's like absolute like insane hatred when people drive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that is like the, what happens to people driving, they go nuts. Like I could pick up on the road rage and it's very frightening. That freaks me out so much. Like people going nuts.
Yeah. You can feel the energy in the car next to you.
Absolutely. Yes. That. Yeah. And also at any sporting event, when people are drinking and there's opposing fans and they're fighting, that is really hostile too.
Yeah.
That's like another level where I can pick up and like, this isn't going to go well. We got to get out. Like they're going to start fighting.
Not like the level of the Christmas shopping frenzy, hours before the stores close. Not quite there. Or the day after when they're going for all the bargains.
Yeah, I mean, I like my Amazon Prime, Wendy, so we avoid a lot
know,
of that.
I know. But, yeah, vicarious high.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so for you, though, I think the big takeaway, and this is, I've read this in some of the NDE stuff, talking about the amount of time it takes to integrate it because you have changed on every single level. Your core is different. What could you, if someone has somebody they know who's gone through this, or, you know, if it happens to them and they have been through it, what would you advise? What is your suggestion, you know, to how to deal with it? What may be the first thing to do?
Absolutely. Everyone's journey is totally different. And that's something that they have to uncover at their pace. I did not speak about my near-death experience for 8 years. So this is now we're on pretty much closing in on year 10. What worked for me was I was always interested in the spiritual community. So after my experience, I just continued on that path, whether it be traditional Native American sweat lodges, meditation class, sound bath, yoga, practice Kabbalah, all these different, the buffet of spirituality. You take what you like, don't like, what resonates, what practice, what healing modality, what ancient wisdom. And I use that to just slowly rebuild the blocks back and see what worked. And that was my process. And I always joke when I first had my ND and I found literature on it, they said the integration was 10 years. Then they said, well, no, we maybe think it's 13. Then they said, we don't know. Maybe it's just, we're not going to put a date on it.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it's, I don't know what it's at now. And I don't think it really matters. It was only comforting in the sense of like, oh, it's been a year and a half. Why am I still a hot mess? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, it takes many years. I feel it takes a lifetime. And one should never stop growing and learning and evolving. Regardless if you had an NDE or not, that's what we should all be doing. We should all be striving to be our best version of ourselves. The NDE just kind of mixes it up a little bit. But for anyone that is out there, it's a long walk, and that's okay. That's what it is. This is not something that's supposed to be wrapped up and completed and check it off the box, 24 months later. It's not. It's a lifelong process of learning, evolving, growing, and being the best version of yourself, your authentic self, I might add, which is another layer of finding what you authentically want to be and who you are. And the NDE helps uncover that a little bit.
You've had a chance to really integrate this, and I appreciate the way that, you know, you've got the language to talk about it coherently, because a lot of that stuff, there's just, you know, when you're talking with your grandfather in this non-corporeal on this other plane, and knowing that's your grandfather, it's yours, it's personal. No one can take it away. And each person who goes through this has to determine, how does this work for me? And I think that's what you're describing, how it works for each person on their own terms.
Absolutely. This is your story. It's no one else's. It's what you believe, it's what you feel, and it's what you understand. And there is no right or wrong answer. This is for the individual.
Do people contact you, or you do you have anything to recommend?
Anyone can reach out to me. It's Chris Tito on Facebook. Just shoot me a message and I'll add you as a friend, and I respond to everybody. It might take a day or so, but I will respond to everybody if it gets to me.
Excellent.
That's it. I don't have a huge amount of social media and all that. Just Facebook is the best way to reach out to me. If anyone has any questions or would like to say anything, I am there.
And I can vouch for all the videos. Okay. Just do a Google search.
Yeah, that's there.
And the comments are mostly good. Okay, I didn't see any bad comments, but just in case you said that, you know, there might be one. We don't pay any attention to those. So it's just, that's usually somebody having a temper tantrum.
And that's fine. Hey, everyone's entitled to their opinion. That's fine.
I appreciate your time. Thank you so much. And, you know, for anyone who's listening, again, Facebook is the contact.
Thank you so much for having me, Wendy. I really appreciate you taking time to speak with me. Thank you.
The video I mentioned earlier, where the commenter made such a wonderful, had a wonderful response, is produced by Anthony Shen, and it's Chene. It's on YouTube. I'm going to put a link on the blog, and this is Talking to Nightlight's WordPress blog, so you can check it out. I'll also link it in the comments here for this show. Thank you for listening. Stay curious.